නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. නමෝතස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. As you all can remember, we were discussing Mahahattipadopama Sutta, which is the 28th sermon in the Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. So basically, Venerable Sariputta is talking about four noble truths. So he starts with telling the simile. So that simile says the elephant's footprint is the largest one. So we can include any other animal's footprint inside this largest elephant's footprint. So therefore, this discourse is called as the simile of the elephant's footprint. So similarly, he mentioned that the Four Noble Truths is the key teaching, the most sublime teaching of the Buddha, and all the other teachings can be included within the Four Noble Truths. And then he starts with talking the Four Noble Truths, what are them? So he basically named them as Dukkha Saccha, Dukkha Samudaya Saccha, Dukkha Nirodha Saccha, Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada Arya Saccha. So likewise, the Four Noble Truths were named, and then one by one, now he is going to explain. And he starts with the first noble truth, that is the Dukkha Ariya Saccha. So there he give a kind of a brief introduction, the typical general introduction, and then at the end he summarize it telling Panchupadanakkhanda Dukkha. The five aggregates of clinging are called suffering. Now, what are they? What are those five clinging subjected to clinging? Five aggregates subjected to clinging. So the form aggregate, material form aggregate, then the feeling aggregate, perceptions aggregate, formations aggregate, and then the consciousness aggregate. Now he starts with talking with the form aggregate, Rupupadanakkhanda. And there he explained, okay, they are particularly the four great elements, Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vayo. That is the earth element, water element, heat element, and the fire element and the air element. And then what is Patavi Dhatu? What is the earth element? And there he says it is of twofold, either internal earth element or the external earth element. And what is internal earth element? Then he is taking examples from the body, about 19 body parts. Mostly they are with the majority of earth element, and so they are selected as the examples for earth element. And basically, when someone is practicing elements meditation, one can go further recognizing elements characteristics. Say, for example, in the Patavi Dhatu, we know that hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness are the characteristics. With the water element, the cohesion and the fluidity are the characteristics. With the air element, maybe a movement, vibrations, rising, falling. So these are the type of characteristics. And then the heat element, hot, cold, so they are the characteristics. So likewise, one can get into this elements meditation, and once there are fair amount of understanding being developed, so he can then generalize it to the outside as well. Through one's inferential knowledge, one can understand, okay, internal earth element and the external earth element are merely earth element. Yacheva kopana ajjattika patavidhatu, yacha bahira patavidhatu, patavidhatu revesa. So there is no difference. Internally, there is earth element, externally, there is earth element, but they are merely earth element. So we are losing that distinction, what we have imposed by ourselves, by humans, dividing things into various parts, various pieces, telling this is internal, this is external, this is you, this is me. Likewise, so all those categorizations, distinctions are eliminated. Now one has a general understanding about all the earth element, and similarly, one would lose whatever attachment, any kind of an importance. What we have attributed to internal earth element, we are now losing. External earth element also now we are losing. So the disenchantment and dispassion would arise. And ultimately, mind can sort of abandon everything, relinquish everything, and can experience freedom. Now, we already discussed this earth element, and then we went on to water element, and then we are now going, we already covered fire element, and now we have to cover the air element. So similar approach he is taking for all the four elements. So what is air element? Kathama avuso vayo dhatu. And there also he mentioned vayo dhatu, the air element also twofold. That is the internal air element and the external air element. And what is the internal air element? So he is giving examples using the body. Uddhangama vata, adhogama vata, kuchisaya vata, kotthasaya vata, angamanga anusarino vata, assasa passasat. So basically the upgoing winds. Say for example you are going through some hiccups. So these sort of things are upgoing winds, and then downgoing winds are also there, and then winds in the belly. So around the say bubbles there are maybe spaces inside that there is air element, and inside the bubbles also there are air elements. And not only that, so we do all our movements, say you are walking, you are raising your hand. So any sort of a movement is because of the air element. So all that movements are happening as a result of the presence of the air element. That is also considered. And the other obvious air element is the in-breath and out-breath. So that is also included. So these are the mostly evident air element. And he adds whatever anything else internally belonging to oneself, saying we think that it belongs to us, and which is air, airy, and clung to. So those are considered as the air element. So basically when one practices vipassana, so we typically start with the air element because that is quite easy. That's why, for example, if one practices Mahasi method, nowadays they are giving this rising and falling of the abdomen as the primary object. So this is quite easy to understand and easy to recognize. So you can recognize as we breathing in, the abdomen comes forward. It has a little movement to the forward direction, rising. And as we breathing out, it comes back, falling happens. So you can be aware of this rising and falling. So it is primarily based on the air element. So again, the in-breath and out-breath, also breath meditation, also based on the air element. So basically, air element is a very good starting point for anyone to start with, so that one's mindfulness can be established, it can be further refined, sharpened, and later clear comprehension also can be included into the picture, so that you are able to recognize various subtle characteristics of either in-breath or out-breath, or rising or falling. So as one continue, say for example if you are practicing rising and falling, probably you may understand other subtle characteristics of rising and falling. How it begins, how you are experiencing in the middle, and how it ends. And there may be a gap just before the beginning of falling. And then how falling begins, the middle of the falling, end of the falling. And there may be a gap between the falling and the next rising. So likewise, the whole cycle can be recognized, further investigated, so that subtle characteristics of this whole process can be understood. And there are not only air elements, you might understand the other elements as well. Say for example, if you are experiencing some kind of a tightness at the end, so that could be recognized as maybe hardness belonging to the earth element. And the movements are there, that is actually the air element. And maybe lightness is there, that belongs to the earth element. So likewise, various characteristics are there. And even the rising, rather than appearing like a single rising, probably you might experience it as a series of little risings, or minute risings are there. Ultimately, we comprehend them as a single rising. But As our mindfulness and clear comprehension sharpens, we may be able to understand these subtle characteristics, little components, and their behavior. So all that basically help us to understand. So this internal AI element and the external AI element are merely AI element. There is no any difference. Yachevakopana Anjattikapata Vayodhatu Yache Bahira Vayodhatu Vayodhatu Revesa. So there is no difference. Internal AI element, external AI element are merely AI element. So this help us to make the mind more dispassionate. So anything related to elements are not thoroughly grasped now. So one important thing in the elements meditation is that as we continue the practice, so the compactness of the body might start disappearing. Typically we feel it as a compact body, a single unit. But as we continue the elements meditation, so it's that compactness, its solid appearance might disappear. It might very much like dissolve. Now you can't, once you close your eyes, so now you can't perceive any kind of a boundary of the body parts. So everything like blurred. And sometimes people say, okay, while we practice element meditation, you are experiencing something like a TV transmission. So in between error transmission, there are dots appearing. So something like that probably the yogis can experience. So when we are going through that breakage of the compactness. Now, so as one is continuing like this, so the any attachment towards the body, any attachment towards any other material phenomena reduces. So the mind loses its grasp and it becomes more dispassionate about the elements. And ultimately everything is given up, mind can get released. Now, after explaining that, Venerable Sariputta get on to explain a little bit about the external AI element. So what is its behavior? So we are actually using the internal AI element to go through our practice, to experience it practically. But now he is giving some understanding about the external AI element. So he says there comes a time when the external AI element is disturbed. It sweeps away villages, towns, cities, districts and countries. So you know that when there is a tornado, what happens to the city? So everything is taken away. All the roofs are taken out. It becomes more wild and so powerful. And if there is a wind happen, a whirlpool type of thing happen, then again the same situation. So the AI element can be really destructive. So that is its most vulnerable vulnerable state. But on the other hand, Venerable Sariputta mentioned there is a time during the hot season, during the last month of the hot season, you might even seek wind by means of a fan or bellows and even the strands of straw in the drift fringe of the thatch do not stir. So basically he says there is no wind at all. Everything is like very quiet, there is no wind, so you still feel very hot because you are going through the hot season. So there the absence of the element is very much like there its activity is not visible. So there probably you start switching on a fan or you are using a hand mechanism to sort of make yourself comfortable or switch on your air conditioner. All these things we are trying our best because the element has become very very subtle, very very weak. So likewise there is a strengthening side or a wild side as well as a very weak side of the air element. So basically by telling this, he's saying, okay, if this is the case for external AI element, And if this is such impermanent, subject to sort of destruction, disappearance and change, so what is the importance or value that we are attributing to the internal air element? So that is also coming under the same situation, that is also impermanent, that is also disappearing, and it is also changing, so no point of attaching to any of these. So by saying so, there is no point of clinging to it, craving to it, and there is no point of considering it as I, mine, or I am. So this is the conclusion he is coming in, telling to abandon it, to relinquish it. Now, air element also, basically, ultimately, we have to relinquish. So that doesn't mean that we are grasping the air element as such, but so these four elements are the constituent parts of any of the physical objects. Say, for example, if you are thinking about a table. So this table has all the four elements, but the majority is the patavidhatu, the earth element. If you think of a cup of tea, it also has all the four elements, but the majority is the water element. So likewise, all different pieces of objects are there in this whole universe, which are physical. They are constructed with these four elements. So we attach to these representations. We give names to them. We give a name. Okay, this is a table, this is a chair, this is a cup, this is a laptop, this is a microphone, this is a car, this is a bus, this is a lorry. So different names we give, and we attach to that as a single unit. So the compactness is there. Sakkaya ditthi is there. So we consider this whole mass as one thing. So that is where we go wrong. We get trapped in that ganasanya, the perception of the compactness. But when we practice elements meditation, we are able to penetrate that, understand its true nature, so that everything very much like appear correctly, everything very much like dissolved. So this compactness is dissolved. Ultimately, we find there is nothing substantial. So that's why Buddha gave a very beautiful simile. This form clinging aggregate is very much like a form, F-O-A-M. Probably you have seen that how form is generated at the bank of a river or bank of a reservoir. So it appears like kind of a white stone, but once you go there and check, it's a mere form, inside nothing, basically it is hollow. So likewise, so this whole form aggregate, even though it appear like solid, moving and very strong, ultimately there is nothing. Now, as usual, he is talking about the other side, other parts of this element, how to use element meditation to abandon any other anger, like say for example when someone is abusing, going through some scolding, any harassing. So how one can use element meditation to abandon any anger? So he simply said there is a painful feeling born of ear contact, so it is actually dependent. So what is the reason? So that is the contact. So this contact also impermanent, feeling also impermanent, perception also impermanent, formations are also impermanent, consciousness also impermanent. So he including this Patisamuppada and the elements into the picture, and now trying to avoid any anger or any other defilements arising in the mind. Similarly, if someone is physically attacking, using fist or using clods, sticks, knives, etc. So there also he encourages us to keep the mind undisturbed by using one sense elements, understanding about the elements, the other sense, other part is the simile of the soul. Kakachupama ovada. So this is a very famous simile given by the Buddha, where he says two bandits are there. So they are using a two handled saw, cutting the limbs part by part. On such case also, if you are generating any anger, any resentment towards them, then you are not my son. So likewise, kind of an extreme simile is given by the Buddha. So sometimes monks are using it to calm them down, to relinquish any anger, any resentment. So this is the simile of the saw. So they are actually, Venerable Sariputta also encourages us to remember that in case we are being physically attacked. And further, he is putting this situation into the inside. Rather than finding a person here and person there outside, so he says his body is very vulnerable. So it's vulnerable in the sense that it is very much like going through any sort of attack. It is so vulnerable. So when someone is hitting, so his body is vulnerable, it can get hit. Now if we had a very subtle body, then even someone is attacking, it may not hit because it is very subtle body, like Deva's body. But his human bodies are really hard, gross. So any other fist or any clod or anything can easily hit the body. So it's a characteristics of the body. Now he is putting it to the inside and to the element side, so that ultimately the personality view is abandoned. We are not taking things personally either, and basically helping us to abandon anger, resentment arising in the mind. Now, after mentioning that, he further mentioned how one should be able to establish oneself in the equanimity. So as we already discussed, so when one is practicing this elements meditation, ultimately all the great elements are abandoned. So any kind of attachment to them are abandoned. So ultimately the mind has to be very much equanimous and not attached to anything. Anissitocha viharati, where you are not associating anything. Mind is now become very simple, equanimous, balanced state. Get into such a balanced state. So this is the state that now Venerable Sariputta is highlighting. Upekkha kusala nissita. So this equanimity is really wholesome. So this wholesome equanimity is where you have to associate. Nothing is there basically. There is no object as such. It's a very much like a wholesome, pure type of mind. And that is the state that you need to associate. But in case it get drifted, suppose that you are going through any abuse, any verbal abuse or physically attack or any other situation. So rather than maintaining our mind on that equanimous state, our mind can drift. So once drifted, how quickly you can return back. So this is the whole theme of the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya, where Buddha advises us to return back again very quickly to that equanimous state. And there also Buddha mentioned, okay, so if one is further developed, so you can be ashamed of this drift. So once mind has drifted, so don't stay there, be ashamed about it. Because you should be there, you should be at that equanimous state. So that is your dwelling, that should be your posture. But now I have shifted. So you have to arouse urgency and revert back to that equanimity. So this is the advice Buddha given there. Now here similarly, Venerable Sariputta points out, okay, you should be able to establish yourself back to the equanimity once you reflect about the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Very much like an urgency should arise when you reflect the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and you should be able to revert back to that equanimity. So this is a very interesting way that he is putting us, how our urgency has to be aroused using reflecting the Buddha Dhamma Sangha and reverting back to that equanimity. So that should be the home position. Now, this is about the four elements, and now he is giving a general description about this body with a simile of a house. This was a very interesting simile, actually. So, what is a house? So, he says, කට්ටංච පටිච්ච වල්ලිංච පටිච්ච තිනංච පටිච්ච මත්තිකංච පටිච්ච ආකාසෝ පරිවාරිතෝ අගාරන්ත්වේව සංඛං ගච්ඡති. Just as when a space is enclosed by timber and creepers, grass and clay, it comes to be termed just house. So nowadays we are using various other material, maybe cement, maybe bricks. We are putting them properly in the proper order, and then we are putting some windows, doors, etc., and then create a roof, and then we mention it as a house. Inside is just the space. So this space is what we in a way surround, prepare or enclose using the walls, and then we call it as a house. But there is no such house intrinsically, so this is a name that we have given. So similarly, he says, when a space is enclosed by bones and sinews, flesh and skin, it comes to be termed just material form. So this our body is similarly, a space is enclosed by bones, sinews, flesh and skin. Then we call it as a body. So there is nothing called really as a, intrinsically as a body, but we basically have covered the space, enclosed the space using bones, sinews, flesh and the skin. Then we call it as a body. Some similar simile given by Bhikkhuni Vajira when she encountered the discussion with Mara. So when Mara is asking who is the creator of this body and who belongs to it, who is the owner of it. And then she says, very much like a cart. So what we call as a cart, it may have two wheels and maybe an axle, and we are putting an ox in the front, and there may be other little timber parts enclosed, and then we call it as a cart. It's a name given. In today's terms, we can say, okay, there are four wheels and then axles and an engine and then the other electronics and electrical components and then the seats, steering wheel, everything. And then we call it as a car. We give a name as a car. But internally, there are many, many little components, parts. Altogether, we have given a name called car. There is no really a car. Similarly, he also, Venerable Sariputta points out, even though this body we name it as, this is a female body, this is a male body, this is a dog, this is a cat, etc. But actually what has happened is that space is enclosed using bones, sinews, flesh and skin. Then we call it as a body. So it's a very strong simile helping us to understand the non-self. The anatta characteristic. Elements meditation is a very useful way of understanding the anatta. So elements are merely elements, so they don't belong to anyone, and they are dependent on other elements. Elements in the sense, say for example, earth element is dependent on the other three elements. Water element dependent on the other three elements. So likewise, they are also dependent, but there is no owner. And there is no any controller. So basically, they are nature help us to understand the non-self, anatta. So he further highlights that anatta by giving this simile of the house. Now, after mentioning that, now he is getting to some other area to explain the other aggregates. Now, how the seeing happens. So he says, internally eye is there, externally forms are there, And the corresponding conscious engagement also has to be there. Suppose internally I is there, but there are no forms and no engagement, then the seeing may not happen. The corresponding consciousness, I consciousness, may not happen. I should be there intact, form should be there, and then the attention also should be there. Then only the corresponding I consciousness may happen. So that's a beautiful term called something called samannaharu, tajjocha samannaharu. So that is the point. Additionally, we can understand. So this conscious engagement. So your attention should be drawn to that. The conscious engagement, tajjo samannaharu, is another requirement for you to properly see something. And now this is how, according to him, the material form is in what has thus come to be, is included in the material form aggregate affected by clinging. Now, in this kind of a situation, in this kind of a process, now there is I, there is form. So those are actually physical parts. Those belong to the material form. And this conscious engagement is actually mental. And then the I consciousness is again mental. As a result of this process, probably you may experience some sort of feeling. That's also mental. And there are, now you are trying to recognize it. That is also perception, mental. And afterwards, there may be thinking, little formations arise. That belongs to formations aggregate. So likewise, now going through this simple scenario, he is trying to explain us the division coming into the five aggregates. Now, I and the form belong to the form aggregate. That is the form aggregates affected by clinging. And then the feelings which is associated in this process, that comes under the feeling aggregate of clinging, affected by clinging. Any perceptions, any signs that we go through, that comes under the perception aggregate affected by clinging. Any thoughts, any intentions coming to the picture, that comes under the formations aggregate. And then the consciousness comes under the consciousness aggregate. Now here the I consciousness comes under the consciousness aggregate. Now, he is mentioning this indeed is how there comes to be the inclusion, gathering and amassing of things into these five aggregates affected by clinging. Now, he is taking different examples, taking the six senses. Actually, later he is explaining the same way about the other faculties, taking ear with sounds, nose with the smells, tongue with the taste, body with the tangibles, and mind with mind objects. Now, after explaining this, he says another interesting statement: Uttanko panetam bhagavata, yo patisamuppadam passati so dhammam passati, yo dhammam passati so patisamuppadam passati. One who sees dependent origination sees the dhamma. One who sees the dhamma sees dependent origination. Now, basically, this is a very valuable statement emphasizing the importance of the dependent origination. In that sense, dependent origination is the crux of the teaching. So, if you have to see the Dhamma, you have to see the dependent origination. So, if you have seen the dependent origination, that means you have understood the Dhamma. So, basically, our understanding, our wrong understanding is that there are things, there are people, there are beings, they are born and they are dying. So this sort of a personality involvement is there. But as we continue the practice, ultimately we will understand there is no such persons, beings. Things are happening as a result of some sort of a principle, which is the dependent origination principle. Imasming sati idang hoti, imasuppada idang uppajjati, imasming asati idang na hoti, imasa nirodha idang nirujjati. When this comes to be, this also comes to be. With the arising of this, this also arises. And this is not present, this also can't be present. With the cessation of this, this also ceases. So things are dependent. All the conditioned phenomena are dependent. They are conditionally arised. They are conditionally arisen. So this is something that we need to understand. So the kind of an encouragement is there towards this dependent origination. And this actually one can understand through one's practice. Say if you are practicing Vedana Anupassana, so the cause of feelings are mentioned as the contact. Contact causes feeling. Passapaccaya Vedana. So as you are practicing Vedana Anupassana, probably you can try to understand this link. Probably when there's a pleasurable feeling, there could be a desire, little craving. So that means feeling causes desire. Vedana paccaya tanha. That also another link which you can understand. So likewise, different easy links are there for us to understand this theory practically while we are practicing. So as we continue Dhammanupassana, Chittanupassana, probably all the other links also become very much clear to us. Not immediately, but with time. Now, anyway, understanding about this dependent origination is very, very important. And so after mentioning that, so he simply says, all these five aggregates affected by clinging are dependently arisen. That means all five clinging aggregates are dependently arisen. They are not made by someone or arisen without any reason. Rather, they are dependently arisen. And that those five aggregates, by the way, we have certain attachment towards them. Yo imesu panchupadana kandesu chando alayo anunayo ajosanang. So dukkha samudayo. So if we are having any kind of an attachment, any desire, any clinging, any sort of indulgence, inclination, so that is actually the origin of suffering. Now the removal of that desire, lust, that is the cessation of suffering. So now he is coming to the picture, into the Four Noble Truths. So we went through a descriptive information about this form aggregate, then a very brief touch into the other four aggregates, basically covered the Dukkha Ariya Sajja, and then basically mentioned it is also conditioned, dependently arisen. And what is the Dukkha Samudaya? So we have certain attachment, certain inclination, any desire towards this five clinging aggregates. So that is the Dukkha Samudaya. So if you are able to cut off this desire, lust, greed, then that is the Dukkha Nirodha, what we call the cessation of suffering. Now he explained the same thing to the other what you call faculties, and basically concludes the sutta. Now I have prepared a little chart just to summarize this whole thing. A little bit appear like complex. So basically for any element, he is talking of the two sides, internal and external, and all are impermanent, arousing some dispassion, disenchantment, and then ultimately establish ourselves with the equanimity. So this is actually a wholesome equanimity and based on the wisdom. And this is one say result one can experience through the elements meditation. And if others abuse, any others attack, then how to recognize it as dependently arisen and it is also impermanent, getting some help from the simile of the saw, reverting back to the equanimity. And similarly, any other drifting happens in the day-to-day activities, again you have to quickly revert back to this equanimity. And there he has given the simile of the daughter-in-law
seeing her father-in-law. Probably you can remember we were discussing that. So, and ultimately, as we discussed today, he has given another simile of the house, and having some sort of a comparison between house and our body. So this is how this whole thing he present, and then getting to the Four Noble Truths, explaining with how the senses are working, our faculties are working. Eye with the form, ear with the sounds, nose with the smells, tongue with the taste, body with the tangibles, mind with mind objects. So when such transaction happen, so what are the constituent parts? Eye, external forms, and the conscious engagement. If those are available, then only the eye conscious that happen. And in that process, there is a feeling which belongs to the feeling aggregate. There are formations, perceptions that comes under the perception aggregate. Formations are there, thoughts are there, intentions are there, coming under the formations aggregate. And the consciousness are there, consciousness aggregate. So likewise, this whole process coming under the dukkha, five aggregates affected by clinging. This whole process is actually the dukkha. Dukkha is arising, dukkha is passing away. Dukkha is arising, dukkha is passing away. So this the whole dukkha satcha he explained, and then he summarized telling, okay, any desire, any indulgence, any inclination, any holding to this five clinging aggregates is what we call as the dukkha samudaya, the cause of suffering. Abandoning of that desire, abandoning of that lust, so that is the dukkha nirodha. So then where are the dukkha nirodha gamini patipadariya satcha, the last one. So understanding this whole thing and practicing to understanding it, that is the dukkha nirodha ariya satcha. Even though it is not particularly mentioned, this whole practice is the development of the path. So that is the dukkha nirodha ariya satcha, which is very much like included here, kind of obvious here. This whole practice, elements practice, so on, maintaining that equanimity and understanding five clinging aggregates, how seeing their arising and passing away nature, seeing their dependently arisen nature. So all that is actually the practice. This practice help us to understand, penetrate the first noble truth, and to abandon the second noble truth, and to realize the Nibbana, and to further develop the path. So that is what basically the essence. So basically the essence is that the first noble truth has to be thoroughly understood. Dukkhaṃ pariññāyaṃ. And then dukkha samudaya, that has to be abandoned. Dukkha samudayaṃ ariya saccaṃ pahātabbaṃ. The desire, the craving has to be abandoned. Dukkha nirodhaṃ ariya saccaṃ sacchikātabbaṃ. You need to realize the Nibbana. And then ultimately, Dukkha nirodhagamini patipadariya satchang bhavetabbang, you need to develop the path. So this whole process, whole practice is actually the development of the path. So therefore, his presentation is very interesting, quite technical, and Four Noble Truths ultimately summarized and ends the sutta. And with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon and this series of sermons based on the Mahāhatti Padopama Sutta. Now I like to open the session for questions. Yeah. So we have a question from our side. Venerable Dhamma Vijita is here. Okay.
Thank you, Bhante.
Please.
Thank you for your teaching, Bhante. I just wanted to add something and see some of your responses to some things I found. One was that Bhikkhu Bodhi, when he's talking about this dependent origination line that Shariputta quotes, the Buddha has said. He said, "This has been said by the Bhagavad, and it's one who sees dependent origination sees the Dhamma. One who sees the Dhamma sees dependent origination." And he says that it's interesting that that's not that there's no other mention of that anywhere in the other suttas.
Correct.
So it's just interesting because it's also Bhikkhu Bodhi says it's the extremely important because it underscores dependent origination as the key to understanding the whole teaching. Dependent origination is the essence of the Dhamma. And I had a Zen teacher who studied the Pali canon, and he said, you know, if anybody asks you a question about Buddhism at all, if you just say dependent origination, that's
it. That's the essence.
Yes.
That's the essence.
So anyway, I just thought I would bring that up. And then,
actually, let me add a little bit before we go to the other issue. So if you now you know that there are suttas like Pancha Vera Bhaya Sutta, I think it's in the Anguttara Nikaya. So there are one attribute of a Sotapanna, a stream winner, is that this very distinct understanding about the Patissamuppada. So one to become a seka, a trainee, so one important aspect is this Patissamuppada. So Ariyo Nyayo Panyaya Suditto Hoti Suppati Viddho. That is how it is mentioned. Ariyo Nyayo. The noble principle. So noble principle is this Idappacheta, this Parisamuppada, this principle. This because of this arise, something like that. This principle is the most important thing. Ariyo Nyayo Panyaya Suditto Hoti. So he has seen that very clearly through his wisdom. So the Tohati Suppati Viddho. So he further highlights, he has penetrated that. So this is one intrinsic characteristic of a Sotapanna. So therefore, so if one is really a Sotapanna, he should have touched this. That we can accept in that sense. So the one important aspect of the Buddha's teaching is Parisamuppada. But Bhikkhu Bodhi, I also has read his remark. He also has mentioned certain others sometimes say, the commentary basically has mentioned, now this principle and then the dependently arisen components are there. Parisamuppanna Dhamma is there. Now say for example, Vijnana is a Parisamuppanna Dhamma, the consciousness. Nama, Rupa, name and form is a Parisamuppanna Dhamma. So one can say, okay, you should know the principle, the theory, and there are resultant components. So this is another way of interpreting it, but I rather than telling so, as you said, better we can take it like the essence of the Buddhist teaching is like Parisamuppada. Okay. Well, I mean, if on the other hand, if one has seen the Parisamuppada, he has seen the Dhamma.
It takes the personal sense of ourselves away.
Exactly. So what we are going through, what we are experiencing is not something personal. Yeah. So everything is very much like a dependently arisen process. Yeah. And we are going through it.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. And I don't know if you're interested, but there was I did find something about the carnal sort of equanimity, what's in the Vedana Samyutta 36. There are five chords of sensual pleasure, forms, sounds, smells, tastes, and touch that are cognizable, lovely, agreeable, pleasing, sensual, enticing, tantalizing. Equanimity that arises in dependence on the five chords of sensual pleasure, this is called carnal equanimity. And what I think that means is, if you think about when you get something, you have something very delicious to eat or something, for a moment you're really desiring it, and then once you have it
enough,
it's sort of like this equanimity saturated, sets in.
Sets in after so, after you feel saturated.
Do you think that's what that means?
Could be. It is not an equanimity comes as a result of the wisdom, but rather because you feel enough.
Yes.
is enough. I am full now.
Yes.
Please, I don't want to eat anymore.
I think I heard that. I think I read that somewhere else in the Dhamma. That's
another kind of equanimity.
That's the maybe unwholesome equanimity. that's based on being fulfilled of sensual desire, carnal equanimity.
Carnal equanimity.
That's what he calls it, carnal equanimity.
What is the sutta, the name?
Vedana Samyukta. It's 36.31.
36.31, Vedana Samyukta.
Yeah.
I'll also look into it. Anything else?
There's one other way I heard of the way we sort of put personality into like ourselves and others. There's a story where somebody's gets in their boat and it's dark out and they're going to go out on the lake and another boat crashes into your boat and you're immediately like, who's this idiot? They're not looking where they're going. And then you notice that there's nobody in the other boat. It's just a, you know, this boat.
Empty boat.
An empty boat. So basically, you know, like when we have an argument with somebody or a fight, you know, maybe we get mad at somebody or feel angry. There's really nothing in there.
And it turns out that you are the idiot.
Yeah, I mean, when we get mad, it's more about us than about the other person, right?
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Good. Yeah. So those are the questions from our side, Jennifer.
All right. Thank you, Bante. I like to invite Mona to the next question. Runika, are you able to unmute?
Okay.
Terwan Sarnai,
Bante.
Yeah. Terwan
Sarnai. Hello, can you hear me, Bante?
Yes, yes.
Bante, while I was listening to your Dhamma talk, I had two questions. You know, one is related to my experience in meditation. So sometimes when we sit in a group meditation, some people start to cough, you know. Normally they don't have a cough, but they cough. And I feel that some energy kind of a, you know, thing coming through my body and coming and stuck in my throat where I want to cough, but mostly I try to suppress it. So that is kind of a inner air that rising with the meditation. Bante, is it? That is my first question.
There could be little imbalances which can happen, because you know sometimes a deep breath happens after a session or in between sessions, so it indicates certain kind of a milestone that we have going through a kind of a process and we have reached a certain kind of a milestone, and then there's a deep breath happens. So similarly, I don't know, sometimes cough can happen due to various reasons. I can't exactly say it has some relevance towards the meditation. It could be also.
So actually, I related to other people, but I thought, you know, when that energy comes up into my throat, you know, I feel like coughing, but I'm not coughing, but I felt it's a kind of a energy that comes in, you know, the air has come up and stuck in there. So it is trying to show the elements which we are not always aware of, that time to time with the meditation only that happens, not normally.
But anyway,
So
if we are able to properly balance the faculties, if we are happening, allowing things to smoothly navigate, then it's very unlikely that the coughing and such things could happen. are instances where we are unable to maintain very delicate balance, and there are hiccups, and then the cough can happen.
Okay. Thank you, Bhante. Then other question is, while I was listening to you, you know, I was thinking of Mughalan Mahathir.
Mm-hmm.
He finally passed away with robbers who came there and, you know, attacked him. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think at that time, you know, though the Mahathir's body was there, he has given up that body when he became the Arahat. It never harmed Mahathir, but it's only harmed the body of Mahathir. So it means it is not really a harm to Mahathir. That's what I felt while I was listening to you. I don't know whether it's my thought is right or wrong.
Yeah, actually, in this sutta also, there is a beautiful statement made by Venerable Sariputta. When physical abuse happen, so he encourages us to recollect that simile of the soap. And further, he summarizes this telling it. So if there is so he basically say, so tireless energy shall be aroused in me, and unremitting mindfulness established. My body shall be tranquil and untroubled, my mind concentrated and unified. And now let contact with fists, clods, sticks and knives assail this body. For this teaching of the Buddha is being practiced by me. So basically he has given up the body. And as you said, kind of a disconnection has happened, disengagement has happened, and somehow he's managed to disengage, and now he let it happen, and he's maintaining his mind without much trouble. Not an easy thing, by the way. Venerable Sariputta points out, even in this Mahahattipadopama Sutta, when someone is going through some physical abuse, by means of the simile of the saw and the applying of the understanding about the elements meditation, how one can disengage from the body and maintaining a sort of a tranquil mind. Anything to contribute?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can...
Yeah.
Yes,
Bhante, one more thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Bhante.
Yeah.
One more thing, that the chart you have published, is there any way we could access it, Bhante?
I can send it to you. Let me see. I'll send it to the group. I'll send it as to the group to Jennifer.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Teron Sanai.
I'm so happy that I would ask the questions.
Okay.
I'll see you in my mind. Thank you.
Yeah, Teron Sanai.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Nandana for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, you can hear me?
Yes.
Okay. You said during this today's talk that as we practice, we can kind of start to understand the Paticchasamuppada, the links, various steps. I can understand that, as you practice, you can... especially certain links like Vedana Paccaya Tanha, then Nama Rupa Paccaya Vijnana.
Mm-hmm.
Certain links, here and there, for the most part, they make, if not practical understanding, at least you know, intellectually you can easily understand, okay, this is what's happening. The moment you have the desire, you know it is as a result of the Vedana that gave rise to the desire and the clinging.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that we understand, but there's one link that I have always struggled with to understand even intellectually. That is the link which says Namarupaccha Salayata.
Mm-hmm.
Now that is, I cannot practically understand it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Even intellectually I have trouble understanding. So are you able to give me some kind of a pointer or some reading or anything that
mm-hmm.
will help me understand that particular link?
Yeah. Now, say for example, we take things personally as a result of the avijja, and now we are assume that we are a little bit of thirsty, and now I am thinking of imagining of drinking a coffee, or drinking maybe a orange juice or something like that. Now internally what's going on is that there is a kind of mental images of what I want. So certain mental images are going on, appearing in our mind, and those actually can be considered, they are not yet physical, by the way. Physically nothing is available in front of me, but I can imagine about an orange juice. So that images are now appearing in the mind. So they appear like very beautiful, appear like very, you know, attractive, pleasing, and I have a little inclination towards that. So that is what actually I have picked. So I have picked this. Now, say there are many things going on in the mind, but I have picked this orange juice. So I have a certain inclination towards this name and form. And the name and form, and now the consciousness are very much like in a whirlpool, very much like in a tanglement, kind of a tangle. But now, as it gathers momentum, I can't simply sit now. I want to have it now, physically. Now I am getting up myself, I am going to the fridge, or I am going and trying to prepare it, I am, squeezing it, and, you know, all that are very much into the activities which are not mental. Now I am into the physical activities. Now, rising up from my seat, going to the fridge or going to another place, gathering things, seeing things, tasting it, all are actually six senses. Now, I was in the mental level from the name and form and the consciousness, but no more. Now I am into the complete action. This action is where I am getting from name and form into the Salayatana.
So I'm because I the way I understood the Salayatana.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, let me ask you this question:
mm-hmm.
Is mind included in Salayatana?
Mind also included, but here for the explanation, so we are at the moment we are considering the name and form and consciousness. Salayatana, inside the Salayatana, there is the sixth sense called the mind sense, which is operating with mind objects.
Okay. Yeah, so the way I understood, I was the difficulty I had was, I guess I still have it, is that now, Patichasamuppada is explained to say that, he's explained in such a way, so as to say that because of this, this arises.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we say because of nama rupa, Salayatana arises, the way you explained it, yes, I understand it.
Hmm.
That concept, yes, I can understand it. Because it's nama rupa, when you say nama rupa, it has all the sanskaras, intention, and everything. So, those will lead us to do something willfully, you know, using our senses.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's very obvious. That's I can understand that.
Hmm.
But is I always thought what it means is that Salayatana comes into being because of Nama Rupa. That's not the case then.
No, it is. Now, say for example, when very very primitive name and form and the consciousness are in operation, those are still very primitive. But as it operates more and more, it gathers the momentum, it becomes more, say, stronger now. Now it promotes more thinking. Now you can't seem, now immediately you are not too much thinking. A glimpse of orange juice, simply an image, an extract of that, simply appear in your mind. You simply perceive it in a very, very subtle way. But your mind catches it. You feel attached to it. You feel a desire to it. Okay, this is what I want now. I am feeling very thirsty. Okay, this is the best solution for this. So you give some preference to it. You are attached to it. You promote it. Now further and further you are thinking about, further thoughts are coming, further images are coming. Now you can't stop. Now say it may give you a strength to get up from the state. So which has given that motivation, which has given that trigger? So we can say that that is the mind which has given the trigger to raise from your seat. So therefore, I think what you said is also included, correct? Because this mental process is the one triggering this whole body to go for an action.
Right. So I'm kind of trying to, this is almost like a splitting statement, but so namarupa, when you say namarupa paccaya salayatana, it is almost like saying namarupa gives rise to the working or the engagement of the senses or salayatanas.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I'm trying to understand is that now when you say salayatana, like the eye or the taste or the tongue and all the nose, these are the sense organs,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So the sense organs actually are like part of form. They're made of the four elements.
Correct.
So, but nama rupa actually did not actually create these senses. But nama rupa only made the use or started engaging the senses because there was some power in that those mental formations and all that, the nama rupa.
Mm-hmm.
So because there were external objects and the nama rupa, sorry, the name principles came into play,
mm-hmm.
and then started interpreting, perceiving the object, and then started making sanskara and or vedana and all that. So that kind of propelled or it propels the person,
mm-hmm.
or the, we call the person,
mm-hmm.
to do something.
Exactly.
Using the senses.
Correct.
So senses were already there.
Uh-huh, but inactive.
Right?
Yeah, they are but inactive. Inactive.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yes.
Correct.
So what it means is when you say nama rupa paccaya salayatana, what it means really is that nama rupa gives rise to the engagement of the salayatana or the use of the salayatana, right?
Oh, we can
is
simply
that,
say
is that a good way to understand?
We can simply say they activate the salayatana.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that makes perfect sense, Pandit.
Yeah,
thank you
yeah,
very
yeah.
much for explaining that.
Yeah.
And I also have another question about the sutta. Right throughout, I was listening to this, and it looks like Venerable Sariputta is explaining or emphasizing mostly the you know the bodily, like the someone abusing you, someone.
Mm.
Harming you with fists and rods and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, I didn't see any mention of the sensual pleasure part.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, what do you have any comments about that, Bhante?
I think
the sensual
that,
desire,
I, yeah.
you know.
Yeah, yeah. So that is where ultimately in explained today. Now you know that what is that? Saying that okay, this eye is there, then the forms is there, then the conscious engagement is there, then comes the eye consciousness. So these are the physically you are experiencing the world. So you mean that through your senses you are experiencing the world. So there are certain requirements are there to need. Your eye should be intact, external form should be there, and your attention also should be there. Then the eye consciousness happen. Now inside this process, I can say, okay, everything is, all our living is very much like summarized. Either you see something, either you hear a sound, either you smell, taste, tangibles, think, all are included. Now on this case, we can say, okay, now there is lust, there is greed, there is craving also can arise. So that is how he says, within this whole process, how we can divide that whole activity, whole experience into the five aggregates. Okay, all the physical components included in this process, now they are coming under the form aggregate. All the feelings arising in this process, they comes under the feeling aggregate. All the perceptions arising in this process, they comes under the perceptions aggregate. All thoughts, intentions, lust, hatred, all that, different kinds of thoughts arising in this process, they comes under the formations aggregate. And your eye consciousness may be involved, your nose consciousness involved, say the tongue consciousness involved, all that, they comes under the consciousness aggregate. So the experiences are very much like summarized and explained, and he has divided that experience into these five aggregates.
Right, okay. So that's how it's to be understood, okay.
Yeah.
Right, Bhante, thank you again.
Yeah.
I have also another question that is not related to the Sutta, Bhante.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple question, I'm sure. I just wanted some information from you about that.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I have been struggling with since recently. One of my very good friends, Kalyanamitta's, passed away recently. And since then, I have always tried to, after meditation, after doing anything that is kind of making me happy or wholesome state of mind, I have always kind of, in silence, I have transferred whatever the merits I have earned to that friend.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I always have this, the doubt in my mind. Is this something that can be done actually?
Mm-hmm.
Transferring of merits. I know that we always, after every meditation and Dhamma discussions, we transfer merits and we chant these gathas.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to ask you, I always have a doubt, did Buddha actually say that one can transfer the merits that one earns
mm-hmm.
to a deceased person
mm-hmm.
or to...
Mm-hmm.
Relatives.
Mm-hmm.
Did he actually say that in one of the suttas?
Suttas, the names I can't remember, but there are instances like certain monks encounter petas, the hungry gods, and they request, okay, Bhante, you do this sort of activities and then transfer merit to me, then I'll be free from this horrible state. So likewise, certain requests are reported in the Petavattu and certain other stories. So therefore it seems like it is possible, but the sharing of merits is a kind of a we can't give a concrete or definite answer. There are instances where the new person, the newborn person, is at a place which he can't reach and share the merits, and there may be instances he is capable of accepting it, he can rejoice it. So therefore we have to look at the situation, and then only we can say, okay, it has been transferred, the transaction is correct, you got the your bank account debited. But there are instances the internet didn't work.
I was curious to know whether Buddha actually said that it can be done.
Yeah. I think so, because I can't exactly remember now. Bimbisara, I think King Bimbisara saw certain dreams and about his passed away relatives. And so then I think he went to the Buddha and asked an explanation, and he said, okay, this is the case, what has happened. So you better And then after King Bimisara offered dana and everything, and then those whoever the relatives actually was satisfied and they were relieved. So I need to find out exact name of the sutta. So such case is recorded actually.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. I would very much like to read that sutta. So if you find it, I would like to see it.
Okay.
Myself.
Okay. I hope internet will be fully okay to transfer. Transaction will happen.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hello, Bhante.
Yep.
Hello, I'd like to, in a way, follow up on the previous question. I had also, I guess I'd like to clarify, I think I have some technical misunderstandings about the definitions. Nama Rupa and the five aggregates, I thought that they kind of were almost sort of different names of the same thing, but they're not, are they? It's not that there's consciousness and then the Nama Rupa being Nama, the formations, perceptions, feelings, and the Rupa, the form aggregate.
No.
That the Nama Rupa also includes other parts.
We have to be very clear one thing here. So that is name and form. Particularly, we need to understand here name as the feeling, Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasikara. Vedana, the feelings, Sanya, the perceptions, Chetana, the volition, Passa, the contact, Manasikara, the attention. So these are very much the primitive aspects of the Chetasika, mental activity. So they are operating. On the screen of the consciousness. See, assume this name, the inside the name there are these five constituent parts: Vedana, Sanya, Chetana, Passa, Manasikara. So these Chetasikas, they are the most primitive aspects of the mentality, and they are operating, they are behaving on the screen of the consciousness. Now, what is the perception that they are taking? So, they are taking the perception of the form. Now, say, as I mentioned, now we are thinking about orange juice. Currently, in front of me, there is no orange juice. But I have picked a certain image from the orange juice, which I have experienced past in the past. Now, that appears as the mental image. That is the perception now I am having. When I am thinking about it, maybe I like it. I have a desire. Those are the little, you know, the formations part, the Chetana part I am having. And again, there may be a, you know, little pleasing, a pleasant kind of feeling that I am experiencing. So that is the feeling part. So likewise, the name and form are internally working. So they are the certain attributes of the form is now taken by the name, the constituent parts of the name. And now they are operating on the consciousness. So now this is how the process is now initiated. It's a kind of a whirlpool, kind of a process is now initiated. Name and form with consciousness. Name and form with consciousness. Name and form with consciousness. Now it is now gathering the momentum. And once it reaches a particular level, you can't stop any activity. You need to act now. Now you are activating the senses.
Why then is there this distinction between five aggregates and the name and form? I guess that's the part I don't quite.
No, actually the five aggregates. Yeah, five aggregates. We don't need to consider here. So this all we can consider as the, I mean, everything happens within these five aggregates. This whole Patisthamuppada is operating within the five aggregates. But this is how it is conditionally the process is, you know, continuing. How ignorance is contributing, and how the formations are contributing, how the consciousness is contributing, how name and form contributing, how six sense bases are contributing, how contact contributing. So it's a kind of a conditionally how this process is operating. So this is the explanation. But as you said, the five aggregates are there. So within the five aggregates, things are, you know, operating. Now, maybe the avijja, the ignorance is, we can consider it also comes under the formations. But, I mean, rather than complicating, so we are now trying to understand what really happens conditionally.
I guess what I was trying to do was to boil everything down to there's just five aggregates. There's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing else. And so trying to see how everything fit into five aggregates. But
uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, all this...
That's what's kind of getting me confused, because then when I came with the... Excuse me, with the name and form,
mm-hmm.
I was trying to see where does the... How does that fit? I guess trying to fit it into this five aggregates
mm-hmm.
model.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't quite reduce it down.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seemed that name and form was already reduced. Like that was the
Yeah, that's
reduction.
The thing. Yeah, so the name and form is a very primitive mental activity in a way. Operating with the consciousness. So it's a very primitive mental activity now we are talking. So
when the thought arises,
mm.
say the orange juice comes to mind, the image of the orange juice, like that glass, the shape of the glass,
mm-hmm.
the orange color.
Mm-hmm.
So I was also thinking of that in terms of element characteristics,
mm-hmm.
like the color is a kind of a temperature, so that's kind of like a heat element. Or maybe how the there's a certain shape to the glass, and I was thinking that as maybe the cohesive element, like the water
mm-hmm.
element. And then maybe also if there was any movement into the thought, like if the glass was moving around, for example.
No. Then
that would be
no.
The air element. Would that be incorrect?
No. Yeah. So basically, so here still we are not experiencing anything physical. So previously,
right.
Suppose that yesterday you had the orange juice. But you remember it. Now in front of you there is no orange juice, and still things are mental. No any physical engagement, there is nothing physical, but so within your mind, now mentally things are constructed. So you are picking certain aspects, certain attributes from that orange juice, and now mentally you are preparing various mental images. You like it, you want it today also. Now you are gathering the momentum.
And we would call that nama rupa.
Yeah, because
that's why I get confused, because the rupa.
Rupa is the extract that you have taken from yesterday's, say, orange juice. It is not here now. So
uh-huh.
you have tasted it yesterday. And you have certain signs, certain marks about it, and certain preferences about it, you know, about that taste you have experienced, and from that also you have gained certain marks. So all that are coming under the name and form. So the form is the sight, and that those attributes that you have picked from the yesterday's orange juice. It is not physically available right now. Everything is happening mentally. But this is my understanding. Yeah, this is my understanding. But you know that in the Mahanidana Sutta, Buddha is talking this whole process of name and form and consciousness operating during the childbirth process. So during the conceiving process, that is a different explanation actually. So here we are trying to apply into day-to-day activities how this name and form and consciousness are operating within our mind in the daily activities, how we are going through. But the explanation given in the Mahanidana Sutta is a different thing.
Yeah, I appreciate I appreciate the explanation, Bhante. I feel I'm going to have to try to practice with that, try to sort of make these distinctions. I find...
The interesting thing is, now say when your mind is clear and there is no any desire and there is no any images appearing in your mind. So your mind is very, very clear, very, very spacious, and your consciousness is not tangled with name and form now. So the whole teaching of the Buddha, in that sense, we can say how to detach from the name and form, how to relinquish the name and form appearing in your mind. Acchejji tanhang idha nama rupe. So acchejji tanhang idha nama rupe. So in right now, what is appearing in your mind, so that is the name and form. Now you need to cut off the craving for that. So if there is no craving operating right now, so the name and form has abandoned. Your mind become completely, you know, like transparent. Nothing is there. Very clear, very clean, very pure.
That I understand.
Yeah.
And I guess that's, you know, sometimes I feel like when we get more into this technical stuff, I start to question what it is that I'm doing, and if I've got it, like, did I miss something? Am I not understanding it properly? And I try to piece it together, and then
that's very good.
It just creates. It's part of the understanding is to understand it
clearer.
But definitely the way you explained it, I've had that understanding, so I will continue to contemplate.
Good. Very good.
Thank you very much, Bhante. Thank you for your talk today.
Yeah, welcome.
Teruvan Sannai.
Thank you. So, Bhante, we have two written questions. Just sent you the first one. So it says, respected Bhante, the question is not directly connected with today's teaching. I appreciate it if it can be taken anyway. There's Wichikicha as Samyojana and Wichikicha as Niwarana. The Samyojana Wichikicha is eradicated with stream entry, but the Niwarana Wichikicha still remains. So there must be a difference between Wichikicha as Samyojana and Wichikicha as Niwarana. Please, can you explain the difference? Thank you, Bhante. Teruvan Sannai.
So basically, this Wichikicha comes under the hindrances. Sometimes explained as skeptical doubt. That you are skeptic about the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, about your training, about the Patisamuppada. So these are the skeptical doubt that typically explained under the Wichikicha. So when one attains stream entry, so that is very much like abandoned. So I can't, any Dhamma Vijaya, you can remember anything, because I was with the impression this Wichikicha, which we are talking in the hindrances, is what we are abandoning in the streaming level. And then you are quite firm about the Buddha. You are quite sure about the Dhamma, sure about the Sangha. So basically, there is no doubt about the path. So you are quite sure about it. So
it cannot be doubt if you know that there is Nibbana. It's not possible. Like, how can I doubt Nibbana and the teaching if I was there and I know it?
Yeah. So basically, he has experienced the Nibbana also by being a stream winner. So he has no doubt about the Nibbana. So basically, there can't be any Wichikicha. So I am with the impression that the Nivarana Vichikicha.
Didn't you say, Bhante, though, that doubt could come back in still with the stream enter? Could he at some point still have doubt come back? Is it fully eradicated?
I guess. No, that is whether whether I am a stream winner.
Yes.
Am I a stream winner? I'm still not sure about it. So those things are possible. Mm-hmm. Like, say, for example, King Mahanama, he go and ask from the Buddha, what would happen to me after the death? And I am quite busy person. So likewise, so there may be instances Even though he is a stream winner, he is not well aware of it.
Mm.
So it's difficult to understand whether I am a stream winner or not. Yeah.
I don't know. Is doubt completely cut off in stream entry?
Mm.
Or is it
so,
latent tendencies?
Mm. No, thing is, no, still there may be certain doubts about certain clarifications may be needed, certain about the some deep aspects of the Dhamma or something like that. Not everything is clear to me, but at least about the Buddha there is no doubt, about the Dhamma there is no doubt. About the Sangha there is no doubt, about the Patissamuppada there is no doubt, isn't it? I mean, these are the very key teachings,
mm-hmm.
like the core teachings, and now he has no doubt about that. So
mm-hmm.
that is why now as the one aspect of the stream winner, it is explained like he has a very clear faith on the Buddha, because he has true about it, about the his teaching, the Sangha and everything, he's quite clear about it. So I feel, therefore, I hope the answer is there, Jennifer.
Yes, Bhante, thank you. And then next question, which I just sent as well. Thiruvan Sanai Bhante, in one of the Dhamma discussions, Most Venerable Sir Jnanarama Mahathiro mentioned about 28 rupas, and out of that, 10 are called bizarre vikara rupa, which a yogi should not look into. Also mentioned, whenever a yogi is with a prepared mind to look into the actual way of the other 18 rupas, that yogi can achieve high results. Could you please explain this?
Yeah, this is the explanation coming in the Abhidhamma. So there are 28 rupas are explained, and elements meditation is directed towards the Abhidhammic way of explanation. But in the suttas, so this explanation is not basically mentioned. So basically what is mentioned is the four elements and the derived elements. So later in the Abhidhamma, these derived elements are then further distributed or further explained as 24 elements, altogether 24 plus 4, altogether 28 elements. And I am not sure, I mean, exactly what are the vikara rupa, this blissaya rupa that mentioned. Now in Nisarnavanaya, Bhante Dhammajiva, and even myself, we don't talk much about the 28 rupas that we have to go through our elements meditation. Rather, what we promote are the characteristics of the elements. Say, rather than taking, okay, this is the Patavi, this is the Tejo, this is the Vayo, okay, this is the other different names that we are trying to recognize. What we are trying to do is to understand their characteristics. So Patavi Dhatu has their own characteristics. Tejo has its characteristics, Vayo has its characteristics, Apo has its characteristics, and through the characteristics only we can experience them. So their presence being experienced through their characteristics. And in the elements meditation, that is what we are trying to recognize when the mindfulness and concentration is available. And this is how the elements meditation is fully practiced. And this is what actually endorsed by Mahasi Sayado and even the Pandita Sayado Upandita. And that is what we are practicing here at Nisarnavane, and that is what we are preaching. And but there is Abhidhamma related, these 28 rupas are also explained, but we are not taking into the practice nowadays.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. The last point here was just the feedback for you, Bhante, not a question. It says Sutta Desana, as well as Bhante's teaching method, is very interesting, and I got very meaningful and clear understanding by listening to entire series of sermons, including wonderful presentations. Much merits to Bhante and Thiruvan Sanai. And with that, thank you, Bhante, very much for your talk today.
Yeah. Okay. So then we'll wind up. We have spent almost like 2 hours, and I like to invite Venerable Dhamma Vijay to continue the sharing of merits.
Thank you for your teaching, Bhante. I'd like to offer these merits to all relatives, celestial beings, and I'd like to invite you to join in the recitation of the traditional Pali verses. Ittavatachamhehi sambhatam punyasampadam sabbe devanamodantu sabba sampatsidhya Ittavatachamhehi sambhatam punyasampadam sabbe bhutanamodantu sabba sampatsidhya Ittavatachamhehi sambhatam punyasampadam sabbe sattanamodantu sabba sampatsidhya Akasakta jibumakta devanaga mahitika Punyam tangan modit vacharan rakantu sasanam Akasakta jibumakta devanaga mahitika Punyam tangan modit vacharan rakantu desanam Akasakta jibumakta devanaga mahitika Punyam tangan modit vacharan rakantu mangpuram Idang bonati nang ho tu sukita hun tu na teo. Idang bonati nang ho tu sukita hun tu na teo. Idang bonati nang ho tu sukita hun tu na teo. Imina punyakam mina bame balas magamo. Satang samagamo ho tu yavanibana patia. Imina punyakam mina mame balas magamo. Satang samagamo ho tu yava nibbana patya Imina punya kamena mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo ho tu yava nibbana patya Sadhu, 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 sadhu.